I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. The Obama administration's decision that requires employers who provide health insurance for their employees to cover birth control services has ignited a fight. The Catholic Church, which opposes contraception, has been critical of this mandate made by the head of Health and Human Services. Many bishops have spoken out against it, saying it's an infringement on religious freedom. Speaker of the House John Boehner blasted the White House yesterday, saying this attack by the federal government on religious freedom in our country must not stand and will not stand. The White House press secretary said yesterday Mr. Obama takes these concerns seriously while also believing that all women should have equal access to contraceptive services, which provide enormous health benefits. It's our topic for today's Radio Times. And let me introduce our two guests. Sally Steenland is director of the Faith and Progressive Policy Initiative at the Center for American Progress. And Sally Steenland, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Also with us is Michael Sean Winters. He writes the Distinctly Catholic blog for the National Catholic Reporter. And Michael Sean Winters, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good to be with you, Marty. Hi, Sally.
Hi, Michael.
I know you two know each other and you actually disagree, which is why we're happy to have you both together. Michael, let me begin with you. You wrote that this administration's decision was shameful, and you even said that the administration has punched Catholics in the nose. What's wrong with this decision?
Absolutely. I mean, it's not that it betrayed me and other progressive Catholics who have been very supportive of this White House. It's that it betrayed the president's own vision. You know, in 2006, he went to Sojourners and said that religiously motivated voters should not have to leave their values at the door when they enter the public square. He went to Notre Dame and gave a commencement speech, which was there was a great deal of controversy. I very strongly defended his right to go to Notre Dame, and he spoke quite eloquently and beautifully about the importance of diversity, about the importance of allowing robust conscience exemptions. And so it's not that he betrayed me, it's that he betrayed his own vision, and that just is so depressing to me, not just for him, but also for the future of the Democratic Party.
Well, let me do a follow-up question, and then Sally, we get you in on the conversation. But Michael, everything we read is that most Catholic women either have used some form of birth control or are using some form of contraception, even as we speak. Shouldn't the Catholic Church, isn't the Catholic Church's argument with Catholic women and not the administration?
That's a different argument. Certainly, there's polling data that, as you indicate, that shows that. But this is about whether the government can coerce a religious organization to do something against its conscience. And, you know, churches are explicitly mentioned in the First Amendment. There's no doubt about that. And so to say, and this could be a mandate about something else. There's a first principle at stake here, which is that the government should not be telling religious institutions what they can and cannot do. And for liberals who have spent these many years convincing us that there should be a wall of separation between church and state, but now to be advocating that it's fine for the government to clamber over that wall as quickly as it can to tell Notre Dame, you better provide contraceptive and abortifacient care. This is not just contraception. It's sterilization and drugs that many biologists say actually, induce an abortion. That's just, to me, it's just the height of hypocrisy.
Well, Sally, let me get you in on the conversation. What's your answer to that?
Well, my answer is that I disagree, I think, factually with several of the things that Michael said, and I agree with some of them. So I definitely agree that religious liberty is a core American value. It protects the conscience of all of us. Religious liberty is always attached to an issue, and in this case, it's attached to the issue of health care and the requirement that employers provide prescriptive contraceptive coverage in their insurance plans. This has nothing to do with churches. There is a religious exemption in this law. It applies to churches and houses of worship. So over 300,000 churches are exempt from this. What this applies to is institutions that have a religious affiliation. Those are large hospitals that employ people of all different faiths, universities that employ and serve people of all religions and of no religion. So the question of religious liberty, in fact, applies to us all. So what happens when the religious liberty of some people infringes on the religious liberty of others, when our conscience bumps up against each other? When does religious liberty become discrimination? And my sense, clear sense, and I come to this as a person of faith with my conscience, is that is that this is turning into discrimination because it is imposing, not churches, but is imposing on the religious, the conscience beliefs of many, many women. And just a factual thing is that it's birth control. It has nothing to do with abortion. So we're talking about large corporations that have a religious affiliation, that employ many people, and we're talking about the religious liberty of all Americans.
And let me just ask you a follow-up question to that, Sally. So if I'm a, let's say, non-Catholic working at a Catholic hospital or a Catholic-affiliated hospital, you're saying that if that hospital doesn't provide these contraceptive services, they are discriminating against me?
What I'm saying is as a part of the health care bill that has been passed, as part of preventive care for women, which is a good that we can all agree on, and birth control pills are the most commonly prescribed pills for women. And another thing that I think that's really important to know is that almost 60%, that's 6 in 10 women who use birth control pills, who use prescription contraception, use them for a reason in addition to or other than birth control. So it's a doctor medically prescribing something for you. So now is the religious institute, the hospital going to grill you and say, why do you want this prescription? They can cost $1,000 a year, $18,000 over the course of a woman's life. And just one more quick thing. The goalposts keep moving with the bishops. What they first started talking about was exemptions for themselves. Yesterday, the bishops changed their tune, and they said now what they want is they want the provision removed from the health care law altogether, not just for Catholic employers. And what the general counsel for the bishops said, he said, is good Catholic business people cannot in good conscience cooperate with this. If I quit this job and opened a Taco Bell, I'd be covered by the mandate. So they want it removed entirely for everybody.
Should it be removed entirely for everybody, Michael Sean Winters?
No. I mean, I don't actually think it should be removed for everyone. There's a difference between a Taco Bell and Notre Dame. But I do want to pick up on what Sally said, which I think she factually described the decision correctly, that churches are exempt, but not Catholic universities or Catholic hospitals or Catholic charities, Catholic soup kitchens. And this is perhaps the most insidious part of the decision, because it is not up to the government to decide what is an integral part of the Catholic mission. You know, we started Catholic, in the Middle Ages, the Catholic Church founded universities because it was considered an integral part of the life of the church. There was no 501c3, designation under the tax code. There was no U.S. tax code in the Middle Ages. There was no United States. So to say, this exemption that exists is sufficient, you are saying that what religion is really about is what you do on Sunday morning and amongst yourselves. But as soon as you start carrying your faith outside of the sanctuary on Sunday and start actually trying to help the poor, and trying to, if somebody comes to a Catholic soup kitchen, we ask, are you hungry? We don't ask if they're Catholic. If we only serve Catholics in our soup kitchens, we would qualify for the exemption. This is absurd, and it's really, really insidious. And Sally, I want you to think about this, because as a progressive faith activist, whom I greatly admire, the implication of the current rule, which you just defended, is that religion is really just what you do on Sunday. And if it extends out and leads you to start hospitals and to start universities and to start soup kitchens and to serve the poor, whether they're Catholic or not, that somehow makes you not a religious institution. That's a pretty crimped notion of religion.
Well, but Michael, let me just jump in here before we hear from Sally. But we're not talking about clients or patients or people that come to soup kitchens. We're talking about employees.
No, but the point of the rule is that you are exempt if you primarily serve only your co-religionists. So if you run a soup kitchen just for your own congregation, you would qualify. But if you open that soup kitchen to anybody who's hungry, then you are not exempt. And that's, I think, what's really outrageous here.
Go ahead, Sally.
Well, sure. I've got 2 points to that. One is, I think the slippery slope goes the other way as well. And we could talk about a Pandora's box which would open if religious groups could claim exemption from obeying a multitude of civil rights laws on religious grounds. And we've seen that. We've seen that with gay and lesbian people. We've seen that with race. And we're seeing it absolutely right now. And the idea that this is an unprecedented assault on religion is just simply factually false. What this is the status quo. 28 states already require this. They already have religious exemptions that do not cover the institutions we're talking about, and there is compliance. Georgetown, DePaul University, Dominican Hospital, all kinds of Catholic institutions have been doing this for over a decade. And even in Cardinal Dolan, who's head of the bishops, in his backyard in New York, that law has been in effect for 10 years. The sky hasn't fallen. People's hair has not been set on fire. This is simply a ratification of the status quo.
Let me go back to you, Michael. Sean Winters, give you a chance to respond to that. I'm actually looking at a press release from DePaul University. The employee insurance health plans include a prescription contraceptive benefit in compliance with state and federal law. Go ahead.
It is unprecedented in several regards. First of all, there are, as Sally said, there are 28 states that do require contraception coverage as part of the basic care. But of those states, all but 10 of them have different types of religious exemptions. Some are more robust, some are less robust. But I do think she's onto something, which is I don't think Catholics were completely aware. I think a lot of people, we found out that the Republican National Committee had health care plan 2 years ago for its employees that covered abortion. And I think a lot of people are not always aware of what is and is not covered. I think this decision actually has created a tipping point. And I would suggest that if you think a governor could now initiate something similar as currently exists in those 28 states, you would see a fight that you might not have seen 10 years ago, because people have been sensitized to this issue and said, wait a minute, this raises some pretty profound concerns, and maybe we weren't paying attention to it. I mean, I think that's the moral life. Sally spoke about a slippery slope. We're always on a slippery slope. That's the price you pay for being a moral agent. And it's, so the question is, where are you going to draw the lines? And I think in this case, the line was drawn unnecessarily narrowly, and what's unprecedented and what makes it different from the state laws that Sally cited is, of course, except for Massachusetts, there is no state in the country that mandates employers to cover insurance. So there was always an opt-out. You could just simply stop providing insurance. And this is a federal mandate so that everyone has to comply. And it's self-evident that that actually does make this an unprecedented issue.
Well, and Sally, hold on to that thought, only because we have to take a very short break. And I do need to very quickly reintroduce you. We're talking with Michael Sean Winters and Sally Steenland about the Obama administration's decision requiring employers who provide health insurance for their employees to cover birth control services. It has ignited much debate and discussion. And we're curious from you, our listeners, where do you stand on this issue? Should Catholic hospitals and universities be exempt from this mandate, or should they be forced to comply? Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Much more to talk about after this short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
St. Joseph's University Graduate Studies in the Arts and Sciences supports WHYY and offers over 41 full and part-time master's and certificate programs on campus or online. A cohort is forming now for the Interdisciplinary Doctorate in Educational Leadership, a program that prepares new leaders marked by the vision, skills, and values to help shape the future of education. Information at sju.edu/edd. Graduate Studies at St. Joseph's University. Higher knowledge, higher potential.
This Friday marks the beginning of Fashion Week in New York. That's where top and up-and-coming designers debut their fall collections. And we have a front-row seat, that is, fashion writer Robin Givhan does. She'll tell us what's hot and what's not, and we'll hear about how clothing inspired by fashions of the Muslim world are making an impact on the runway. That's next time on Tell Me More.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
10,000 Villages in Ephrata supports WHYY, now hosting their annual rug event with an Oriental Rug Seminar Friday, February 10th at 7 p.m. Online at rugs.10,000villages.com.
Hello, this is Margaret Kuo. To celebrate the Cherry Blossom Festival with the Japan American Society, Dr. Hamada from Villanova and I will present a tutorial luncheon in my Wayne restaurant on Sunday, February 26th. Margaret Kuo's restaurants support WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Sally Steenland. She joins us from the studios of the Center for American Progress, where she's director of the Faith and Progressive Policy Initiative. Also edited a collection of essays debating the divine religion in 21st century American democracy. On the telephone is Michael Sean Winters. He writes the Distinctly Catholic blog for the National Catholic Reporter. And his new book is called God's Right Hand, How Jerry Falwell Made God a Republican and baptize the American right. And just a couple open lines at 1-888-477-9499. Sally, I know you wanted to say something right before the break. I hope you held on to that thought.
Chewing on the microphone, actually.
Well, go ahead. Please talk.
I just want us all to remember here that healthcare for women is a public good. It's part of the common good. We're talking about this. You know, I think it's the slippery slope, too, is we can be talking about this as if it's an evil. This is something we all agree on. We all agree on the need for fewer unwanted pregnancies, the need for less abortion. And this all gets us to a common goal. And I think it's really time to lower the heat, step away from the barricades, and come to the table. We've got 18 months to figure out how to make this work. And I've just got one quick idea. I want to throw my idea into
the pot.
So faith-based institutions like the Salvation Army and Catholic groups all the time get lots of money from the federal government. And you're not allowed to use your federal money for proselytizing because of the First Amendment. And institutions know very well how to segment that money and use certain money just for their social service programs and other money for their own money for proselytizing. So so when you offer health insurance to your employees, I work for you, I work for Catholic Charities, I pay $100 a month for my premium. And of that $100 a month, a dollar goes for my contraceptive care. Make the dollar for the premium come from me. I'll pay for that. It's the employee contribution. The employer doesn't pay a dime, doesn't pay a penny. It just sequester the money like you do with federal government money. You know how to do it. This goes for this. This goes for that. I want it. I choose it. So nobody's got a gun to my head. If I don't want it, if I think it's morally wrong, I don't use it. I don't choose it. But if I want it, I pay for it myself. And the Catholic religious affiliated institution is completely out of it.
Well, Michael, does that compromise, in a sense, resolve this issue for you?
Two things, one a political thing and one on the policy suggestion. On the political thing, at this point, the president has messed this up so badly and has so affronted progressive Catholics who have taken a lot of shots for this guy. I mean, you know, the person who was most directly affected by this was Sister Carol Keehan. And without Sister Carol Keehan, she's the head of the Catholic Health Association, and she worked with Bart Stupak and those pro-life Democrats, without whom there would be no Affordable Care Act, and we wouldn't be talking about extending contraceptive care to anyone. And that the president just cut her off at the knees, knew he was doing it, and did it anyway, leads me to believe that it's going to take more than just some kind of policy tinkering to fix this. He showed him, you know, in November, he met with Archbishop Dolan. By all accounts, he told Archbishop Dolan, who is now Cardinal-designate Dolan in New York, and the president of the Bishops' Conference, he said, "You will be pleased with our decision." So at that point, the president obviously was not hugely concerned about the other side. And then this blowback came from the pro-choice community, and he caved. I'm a cradle Catholic, and I'm a bit of a stiff-necked Catholic. I grew up watching movies like, you know, A Man for All Seasons and Thomas Becket. Now, of course, Henry II had to do public penance at Becket's tomb. Now, I'm not saying that President Obama has to do public penance, but he's going to have to do a lot to make this right.
But the actual policy suggestion,
I think, you know, Sally may be onto something. I would actually, and one of the ideas I hear being talked about would be slightly different, which is that women who wish to get contraceptive care and work for an institution that does not provide it, can simply access it through the exchanges that the Affordable Care Act is also setting up. The danger of the solution that Sally suggested is money is fungible, and I think that again, this is something that we didn't really think about necessarily 10 years ago or 20 years ago. We're all still kind of worried. You know, the line between church and state is always being looked at and shifted and moved based on circumstances and as they change and as we all learn about some of the consequences of those lines. But I do think you're going to need a little bit clearer break.
But, Michael, you can't have it both ways. I mean, money's either fungible or not. And, what's the difference if you work for a Catholic institution? They pay you a salary. That's Catholic money. You go buy condoms. They've just bought condoms.
You know, obviously, Sally, you know, the difference there is that the institution did not formally, there was no formal cooperation in that decision. And this gets to the heart of your analogy about, you know, what about the conscience rights of even non-Catholic women or Catholic women who use contraception who work at a Catholic institution? And you know, there's something, and certainly you didn't say this today, but when I hear some of the advocates on the other side and who are making this argument, you know, what about the conscience rights of women who go to Notre Dame or who work at Notre Dame? You know, there's something very patronizing about that, because when you work at a Catholic institution, whether it's a hospital or a university, you know what you're signing up for. First of all, you know you're not going to get paid as much as it in a secular equivalent, but there's something about the Catholic identity of that institution that makes you want to work there. And they know what they're signing up. They know that it means there's no meat on Fridays, and it means that you're not going to get contraceptive care, and the bishops are somehow going to be involved with what that university or hospital can and cannot do. And you know, if I walk into a Jewish deli and I complain that there's no pork on the menu, the problem is not with the deli.
But in fact, in 20...
Wait, hold on. Sally, go ahead, and then I have a couple of questions
sure.
as well, and I do want to get some callers.
But in fact, in 28 states, Catholic institutions do provide health care, and the Republican National Committee did provide health care, so it's really not that simple, and it's not patronizing at all. I mean, that may be the best job somebody can get. It may be best suited for them. It may be, in this economy, jobs are hard to get, and I'm not sure everybody looks at the small print in their insurance plan. So I think that, frankly, and again, with all due respect, that feels a little bit glib to me, but I do like your idea about going to solutions, and I think that's where we should be going. And my concern about the bishops with their $10 million PR campaign is come to the table. And my concern with Mr. Piccirillo yesterday saying, oh, by the way, yesterday we, you know, 2 days ago we said it was just the Catholic mandate. Now we're saying for everybody, take it out altogether. You can't negotiate in good faith with people who keep changing their mind and refuse to come to the table.
I'm sure you're aware, and you're in Washington, and I'm actually up at my home in Connecticut right now. The White House isn't reaching out to the bishops at all right now. They're not reaching out to Sister Carol Keehan. So, they've got to figure out what they have to do, and I would argue that instead of talking immediately to the bishops, they've got to go to the pro-choice caucus on Capitol Hill. They've got to go to NARAL. They have to go to NOW, and they have to say, look, this decision is imperiling the Affordable Care Act itself. The Affordable Care Act will extend contraceptive care to something like 20 to 25 million women. Does it really have to go to 26 million? If that means risking the whole thing, I mean, there's a political short-sightedness here. Now, I didn't hear Mr. Piccirillo's interview yesterday. I think the bishops have always voiced concern about the mandate. I don't think it was a deal breaker in November. Obviously, after the president told Archbishop Dolan that you will be pleased with what we do, and then completely backtracked on that.
Well, let me just
word is not held in doesn't have the currency it had 2 months ago.
Let me just jump in here, yes. Michael. Hold it, if you don't mind, and I appreciate the back and forth. I do want to get some callers in. I need to very quickly reintroduce you. Michael Sean Winters writes the distinctly Catholic blog for the National Catholic Reporter. Sally Steenland, director of the Faith and Progressive Policy Initiative at the Center for American Progress, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. So let me go back to you, and hearing you and Michael go back and forth, and frankly, I appreciate I appreciate the level of discussion and the fact that we're having a very smart discussion and disagreement, especially on this particular issue. But it seems to me, if on the one hand you have an organization that thinks of contraception as a sin, And another side that thinks of contraception as a right. And I don't see how that can be resolved. Sally?
Well, I think what we have to say here is, who is the Catholic Church? Who gets to define the Catholic Church? Is the Catholic Church 200-some bishops, or is the Catholic Church the millions of people in the pews? Is their conscience less valuable, the conscience of theologians, the conscience of ethicists? The document that came out with this doctrine was a highly disputed document. So these are not the Ten Commandments. This is not infallible. This is disputed doctrine. Who gets to define who the Catholic Church is? I tend to say the Catholic hierarchy, because in fact it is not the Catholic Church. And so many people have corrected me on that, who said, excuse me, I'm the Catholic Church, and I don't have a way for the teachings to reflect my views. And it's very, very painful to many people.
Michael, and this is a little weird because I'm quoting Timothy Egan, who's quoting somebody else, but nonetheless, he wrote an interesting piece talking about a snapshot, as he described it, by the National Catholic Reporter, found that most members of the church believe in the core theological constructs, but ignore the church's teachings on sex, always the great hang-up. And quoting here, only 1 in 5 Catholics said that church leaders were the proper arbiters on such matters as divorce, abortion, sexual conduct, homosexuality. There's an interesting, it seems, divide within the church between the leadership and the people in the pews.
And to the extent that there is a divide there, it is an internal family discussion to which we certainly do not want, because the implications could hardly be more horrific. Inviting the government with the coercive power of law into that argument. We have that amongst ourselves, and I think this is part of what the administration misunderstood. I have disagreed with the bishops before. I supported the Affordable Care Act. They thought that certain provisions were not strong enough there. I don't regret supporting that. I didn't mind particularly disagreeing with my bishops on that. I also disagree with my dad on occasion. But if somebody else comes along and attacks my dad or attacks my bishops, my dander gets up.
So personal.
This is really, again, this gets to what Sally was just saying. You know, it's true. The Catholic Church, we don't take votes on this stuff. You know, and that's the way it works out. And to use a very proximate analogy from American history, in the 1920s, Planned Parenthood, which had just started with Margaret Sanger, very strongly advocated for eugenics. The Supreme Court in Buck v. Bell endorsed that view. Oliver Wendell Holmes, a great liberal jurist, famously said, 3 generations of imbeciles are enough. And the Supreme Court allowed the Commonwealth of Virginia to sterilize a mentally handicapped girl against her will. Now, this was before Joseph Mengele gave eugenics a bad name. But the teaching of the Catholic Church on contraception can't just be seen apart from all the other teachings. It stems from this same concern that caused us in the 1920s and 30s to oppose eugenics, and that causes us today to be very concerned, and this is one of Pope Benedict's dominant themes, about the environment, which is there are these natural processes, and we, human beings with our confidence in our own smarts and our sense of progress, come in and we tinker at will, and often do not think about the consequences of that. And that these
Michael,
are very, very dangerous.
Michael, hold on.
All I want to say is you can't just take, one Catholic teaching and say, people don't abide that. You know, this is how law works. I mean, we have laws against burglary, and just because some people still burgle doesn't mean that you do away with the law.
But are you saying contraception is a form of eugenics?
Well, it certainly was advocated as such by Mrs. Sanger when she founded the Planned Parenthood. My argument is not that. My argument is that both contraception, that the church's teaching is rooted in a belief that we should respect natural processes and be very wary of utilitarian calculi and of our ability to adequately exercise utilitarian calculi in making moral decisions.
Go ahead, Sally.
That's how they're linked.
Go ahead, Sally, then we'll get Emily in.
That's a very, interesting sort of theoretical discussion, but in the real world, what's so interesting is women keep getting erased from this picture. This has to do with women. This has to do with planning our families, how we live our lives. lives. This has to do with whether you're going to have 12 children, 14 children, or two or three who you can morally, financially, and emotionally be responsible for. We don't see families with 14 children anymore. There's a reason for that. It comes to the core of private decision making, and it has absolutely nothing to do with eugenics. I mean, I think that's just like totally way out there. I just want to say one other thing about religious liberty. You know, it's been a struggle for 236 years in our country. And when it's been already solved, we look back and we say, oh, that was easy. But it wasn't at the time. And that's what we're going through right now. 30 years ago, Bob Jones University was racist. They didn't let their students, interracial students, date. And the IRS was going to yank their tax-exempt status. And they screamed religious liberty. We shouldn't forget that race and civil rights, the segregationist claims for that were religious liberty. It was highly contested. We now say, oh, that was discrimination. But at the time, it was considered liberty.
Let me get Emily from media in on our conversation. And Emily, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I wanted Mr. Winters to just directly address Sally's statistic that she provided about 60% of women who use the birth control pill for reasons other than family planning, such as treating depression or regulating monthly bleeding or reasons such as that. How would you propose that those women would be able to gain access to the birth control pill in those situations?
Emily, thanks for the call. Michael, go ahead.
You know, I would just point out that, you know, there's no birth control Gestapo at Notre Dame or at a Catholic hospital. If women want to use this, and they can, and I'm certainly not trying to write women out of this equation, but the issue when you're talking about the coercion of conscience is who does the law force to do what? And in this case, I think, you know, Sally would agree that there is not on the face of the text a constitutional right to contraception. Now, clearly, from Griswold v. Connecticut, which is longstanding law now, there is a right to privacy in the penumbra of the Constitution. I don't even have a problem with that. But as we saw recently in the Hosanna-Tabor case, in which was a 9-0 decision, in which the justices actually laughed at the Justice Department's argument, both in the decision and in the oral arguments, when a very good public policy that meets important interests that we may all agree about comes into conflict with the clear language of the First Amendment, the First Amendment points the way to the guide.
Well, Michael, let me stop you there because you're not answering Emily's question. If someone is taking a birth control pill for a non-reproductive reason, what right does she have if she works at a let's say, a Catholic-run hospital?
Every right to get, she can have birth control every morning if she wants, but the Catholic hospital should not be forced to pay for it.
Even though she's not using it for contraception.
I want to be clear here. I do think, you know, and it's my understanding of church teaching, that obviously the use of a contraceptive for a non-contraceptive purpose is morally licit. But, you know, there's a bit of a canard here. We're not talking about something that is particularly hard to access. And you know, I've never been to a Planned Parenthood clinic, but I understand that you can get this pretty cheap. And as Sally was indicating, I think there may be a way to either, you know, allow the coverage, the insurance coverage for it, you know, through an exchange or through some mechanism. But I want to get to this point.
No, you can't. You can't. We have to take a very short break, and okay. I have to give Sally Steenland a chance to weigh in as well. Michael Sean Winters and Sally Steenland, our guests today on Radio Times, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Once again, Sally, I'm going to put you, don't bite your microphone, but we'll have you respond after this very short break. We'll be right back.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY. Fox Chase has posted 5-year survival rates for major cancers on its website. Survival rates at Fox Chase are compared to those at community hospitals across the nation. This is but one measure of quality to help you make decisions about cancer care. At Fox Chase, compassionate care is much more than a number. It's part of their mission to prevail over cancer. More at foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center. Hearts plus minds.
A decision is a conscious choice. Everyone makes hundreds a day. One of the choices you've made is to listen to WHYY, and for that we thank you. Now consider choosing to support this service. We'd like to finish the winter membership drive, and we will when we reach the goal of raising $800,000, but we can't get there without you. Your membership dollars help WHYY pay for programs from NPR, PRI, and APM. Make the choice to support WHYY now by visiting WHYY.org. Thanks.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. A rider puts tracking devices on his bikes and then follows them to the underground world of bike theft. We'll hear what he found. Also, over a dozen Americans are detained and facing charges in an Egypt that's still seeing unrest. We'll take a closer look. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture, here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. The Obama administration's recent decision to mandate free contraceptive coverage as part of the Affordable Care Act has ignited a debate over religious freedom, reproductive rights, and health insurance. We are debating and discussing that issue today on Radio Times with Sally Steenland, Director of the Faith and Progressive Policy Initiative at the Center for American Progress, and Michael Sean Winters. He writes the Distinctly Catholic blog for the National Catholic Reporter. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Sally, go ahead. I know you want to say something in response.
Sure. So Emily just asked a question about what about the 6 in 10 women who use prescription contraceptives for reasons in addition to or other than birth control, family planning. Should they be discriminated against? Should that whole class of drug, when your doctor writes you a prescription and says you need this for endometriosis, you need this because there's a history of ovarian cancer in your family, using this will cut your chances of ovarian cancer in half. It could save your life. When your doctor tells you this and you need that as part of your health care plan, and guess what, Michael? They're really not that cheap. Birth control can cost up to $1,000 a year. And if you're a receptionist at Notre Dame, or if you're a health aide at a Catholic hospital, that is a huge amount of money. What do you do? Do you have to go before a panel? I mean, talk about intrusion on your. Is there a panel of employers who aren't medical people at all who say, okay, you tell me why, and I'll either say yes or no to you?
Well, and I'm going to let that question hang out there because I do want to get some more callers in on the conversation. And we have Tom from Morrisville joining us. And Tom, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, just part of my question has been answered already by Sally as far as whether these institutions were receiving any federal money. And bearing in mind the admonition, render unto Caesar, why shouldn't they, then, if they're taking federal money, why shouldn't they be subject to federal law?
Let me put that question to you, Michael. Go ahead.
And I'll listen
well,
the
mandate
thanks,
has nothing to do with whether or not an organization does or does not receive federal funds. This is an employer mandate that's universal, right? That was the whole point of the Affordable Care Act. There's no connection there at all.
Do you agree with that, Sally?
Yeah, I think legally that's probably right. But I think an important point is raised. And you know, as I had said earlier, this is a lively debate that we've had in our country for 236 years, and it's civil rights laws, it's competing interests, it's competing claims of conscience, and we fight it out. We don't get guns and shoot each other. We debate it out, and public opinion has something to do with it, the law has something to do with it, and we work it out. And I have to say, I am confident we will work this out as well for the protection of religious liberty and for the medical needs and the protection of women. I just think we will.
Let me see what Joe from Fairmont has to say. And Joe, go ahead. You're on Radio Time.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to make a couple points. The first one is, I believe we're getting a little bit sidetracked debating sort of than some of the merits of Catholic teaching, but I believe the real issue here is about whether the conscious exemption, you know, I believe the government here is mandating the Catholic organizations to provide these services that are against their teachings and conscience. And, you know, when you mandate that, you take away the, you know, exemption of people, not go against their conscience. And, you know, I want to just mention that employees have the freedom of choice for which organization they work for, and they can choose an organization that matches, you know, their values. As myself, I'm a Catholic physician, and I personally do not provide contraception because it is against my conscience. I do believe and disagree with Sally that many contraceptives, such as the IUD, Implanon, are abortifacient by the definition of life as at conception, and many oral contraceptives are. And I believe that I should have a right to practice, you know, according to my religious conscience and faith beliefs and scientific beliefs. And I believe these organizations that are Catholic organizations should also, you know, have the right to provide services in accordance with their conscience. And I believe it's really about the conscience exemption.
Well, fair enough. Joe, let me, and I appreciate the call. Let me give Sally Steenland a chance to respond. Go ahead,
Well,
Sally.
And you have absolutely every right to do that. And we see, again, we see this playing out in hospitals and in institutions around the country. There was just a settlement in New Jersey where 12 Catholic nurses refused to provide routine care to patients, taking their blood pressure, even writing their names in a medical chart if those patients had had abortions. They said, we're not going to do it because it violates our conscience. So this goes to my point of the slippery slope. And in fact, they won. They did not have to do that. But what if they had said, I believe homosexuals are an abomination in the name of the Lord, and this lesbian has come in for cataract surgery, and I'm not going to change her sheets. I'm not going to take her blood pressure because it goes against my religious belief. These are the real world situations in which this plays out.
You want to weigh in on that, Michael?
Yeah, and I think, you know, as Sally just pointed out, there are certain circumstances that I can imagine where religious liberty is invoked in an inappropriate way. But on this case, and again, I think it gets to the exact point, which is, even if you accept that people have a constitutional right to use contraception, and they have a constitutional right to, as religious members, to be a part of their religion and exercise their religion freely, no one has a constitutional right to work at a Catholic hospital or work at a Catholic university or attend a Catholic university. And that's what's at issue here, is the employee policies and the insurance policies for students and employees. And we, all of us, make choices in life that circumscribe our subsequent choices. And, you know, if I go to a vegetarian restaurant, I can't get a burger, okay? So I've made a prior choice. And so this idea that somehow, you know, the individual conscience right of an employee at a Catholic institution trumps that institution's conscience rights seems to me just absurd, that that's not actually how it should work legally. And so here's where I get a little stiff-necked, is, yeah, we get to decide whether a university is an integral part of our Catholic mission and identity, and whether it is just as religious as what we do on Sunday morning, not the government.
Two quick things. One is, again, just let me just say, this is the status quo. This is not a new thing. This is already happening. So this unprecedented attack, in fact, has been common existence for a common good for a while. And let me just go global for a minute and to say that in Italy, so we're talking about the Vatican's backyard, Catholic hospitals provide for their employees contraceptive care. So, you know, what we're really talking about here is, it disappoints me in a way, too, because there's so much attention. There's been such a firestorm over this and so much money going into this. It makes me a little sad about all of the other issues. What about immigration? What about all the 6 points of the forming a Catholic conscience? What about all the things the bishops care about so deeply? When have we seen them be so passionate about economic inequality, about poverty? If their robes are on fire for this, how come they haven't, you know, spent as much money or more or campaigns on those other issues which reflect much more Catholic teaching and many more teachings than just this one single one?
But Sally, hold on, Michael. But Sally, Michael's point was that in the United States, people can choose where to work. So if I choose to work at a Catholic-run hospital, that's my choice. And I'd just like to have you, what's your answer to that?
In some cases, that's the only employer for your job. In some more rural areas, again, with Catholic hospitals buying up so many different hospitals and become 1 in 6 hospitals in the United States is a Catholic hospital. You may not have that choice at all. That may be the only job you can get.
Let me get, go ahead, Michael.
Okay, first of all, those 1 in 6 hospitals that are Catholic, they were started before there was a tax code, before there was contraception in many cases, and so now we're going to be penalized because we deliver really good health care. That is the most offensive argument I can think of. That, you know, and to use another example, inner city Catholic schools in the 50s and 60s, as Catholics fled to the suburbs, many bishops, and again, I have my problems with bishops, but they decided to keep these schools open even though they were serving largely non-Catholic, largely minority, underprivileged youth. And now we won't qualify for this exemption because we do that. And so I know it's easy to bang on the bishops and say they're big, bad bishops and they're telling women what to do.
Oh, I didn't say big, bad bishops.
But they've made some really good decisions here. And one of those, Sally, to get right to your point, is why don't we hear the bishops talk about other issues? When this was first raised and addressed in November by Bishop Laurie, the head of the Committee on Religious Liberty, the ad hoc committee, the first instance he gave of an assault on religious liberty was not the HHS conscience exemption. It was the Republican-passed, Republican-signed Alabama immigration law, which requires Catholic schools and Catholic hospitals to ask for immigration papers from our students and from our hospital clients. And the Catholic Church is suing in Alabama today to overturn that decision on these exact same religious liberty grounds. Because in the same way as we don't ask people if they're Catholic to come to our soup kitchens, we're not going to ask if they have legal documentation to come to our Catholic
hospitals. So why isn't the $10 million campaign going to Alabama, Arizona, and all of those real issues?
Very quickly. The Alabama law is a part of this religious liberty argument. And the first time I even heard this argument raised was back in 2005 or 2006, when the Republicans in the House were debating an anti-immigrant law, and Cardinal Mahoney in Los Angeles stood up and said, if you ask our Catholic teachers and our hospital workers to seek documentation of our clients, we will refuse to do that and we will practice civil disobedience.
But surely
this goes way back, and again,
right, but
this
surely,
gets to the key thing. You've got to be consistent on your first principles
correct,
here. And the common good by the First Amendment
has to be
a part of it.
You gotta give Sally a chance to respond. Go ahead.
No, I'm not saying it's not part of it. I agree that it is. All I'm saying is the headline, what people are leading with, the incredibly inflammatory, apocalyptic rhetoric, is not about immigration.
And let me just jump in here because we do have some callers that want to be part of this conversation, including Anna from Maryland. Anna, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I am a lifelong Catholic, and I consider myself very progressive, and I have to tell you that I think we need to be very honest about what's going on here, and that this is not a matter of this, you know, of what Catholics want. It's a matter of what the Catholic Church wants, and the Catholic Church in this case is a conference of bishops who are not duly elected by members of the Church itself. And I think the fact that there are no women who are allowed to participate at the high levels of the Catholic Church where these decisions are made is reflected in the positions that are being taken. Even the idea that it doesn't seem to be a good sense that that contraceptives are used for other medical purposes reflects a lack of understanding, frankly, a lot of bullheadedness about an issue. And I really feel like, and I'm very embarrassed that our church is being such a bully on these issues.
Well,
conscience is individual, and it is a matter between us and our God. And if we choose to use contraceptives, we should not be blocked from doing that by this group or this cabal of men.
Well, let me give both of our guests a chance to respond to your call, Anna. And Sally, I'll begin with you. Is this a gender issue?
I deferred. I'll let Michael talk first.
Okay, go ahead, Michael.
You know, again, in the Catholic Church, we have a way of conducting our business and reaching conclusions on this. It's been going on for 2,000 years. It's a great free country. If that doesn't satisfy people for how we reach our decisions, that's okay. As the caller said, everyone's conscience at a certain point is, of course, between them and their God, but it is the voice of God, not the voice of the self and whatever the self may want, as Catholics understand conscience.
Sally, you want to add anything to that?
I would just say that the gender issue is one I've heard over and over again in terms of women expressing those same feelings. So I really appreciate that comment. And I also would have to say that in terms of polling, what we see is a big gender difference, that women feel much, much more strongly about this issue and support it much more strongly.
Michael, earlier Sally said that she feels confident there can be some kind of resolution to this issue. Do you share her confidence?
I'm hopeful, but I'm not as confident as Sally. I think the administration has mishandled that this since August. I think there is a real sense of betrayal. I mean, the White House was telling progressive Catholics, and again was telling Archbishop Dolan, the president of the Bishops' Conference, we're taking it seriously. You're going to be happy with what we come up with. We get it. And then they did this. And so It's very hard to go back and have negotiations with somebody who you know, just punched you in the nose. There's a wide variety of opinions within the Bishops' Conference. And Cardinal-designate Dolan is not somebody who was looking to go to war with the Obama administration. He did want to win on this issue, to be sure. But he was very severely criticized by some more conservative bishops who I think did want to go to war with the Obama administration. And this decision has had the effect of completely cutting him off at the knees, and he's had to go back to some of these more conservatives who said, oh, you can't trust Obama, and he's had to eat crow, and that obviously, you know, strengthens the hands of the people who aren't going to support this administration, you know, whatever they do, and that's one of the unfortunate fallouts from this. I mean,
well, so, hold on, Mike.
President Michael, Obama until this.
Hold on one second, because we have about a minute, and I want to just do a quick follow-up question to you, Sally. Then, what will you be looking for, which tells you that there is some kind of resolution to this issue?
Well, the administration is already saying they're interested in finding ways to work together, and that's what the 18-month period is. There are lots of workarounds in the 28 states that already have these requirements. So let's be creative. Let's see what various states are doing. Let's see how people are living with this. If you have concerns, bring them to the table. That's the only way we can get something done. You can, like, stand at the barricades and scream, or you can sit at the table. And I think the administration has made it very clear that they are interested in finding a solution, interested in working with people, given time to do that, and that's an invitation.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Sally Steenland, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And Michael Sean Winters, thank you very much as well.
Great to be with you both.
And Sally Steenland is director of the Faith and Progressive Policy Initiative at the Center for American Progress, joined us from their studios. Michael Sean Winters writes the Distinctly Catholic blog for the National Catholic Reporter. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes. You can find out much more about this program. Chances are we've got a lively discussion on this very topic on our Facebook page, so you might want to check that out. I'm Marty Moscoen. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. We'll be right back. From a